From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the third day of May 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, Scott Irwin will be here to discuss an article he and Todd Hubbs wrote earlier in the week for the Farm Doc Daily website and what might happen to corn yield if more than 30% of the crop nationwide is left to plant after the 20th day of May. As we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast and have a better idea of how close we'll get to that mark. We'll do that with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. That's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, to talk about what happened in Chicago for the day and for the week. Hey, good afternoon to you, Michael. It's a good Friday.
Good Friday to you, Todd.
Hey, so tell me about things in Chicago this week in general.
I think it's the calm before the storm, unfortunately. I know that's not what we want to hear, especially after the route we took in the soybeans. And was actually looking at the April totals because we switched months in the middle of the week. And while corn was only down about 3.25 cents for the month of April, beans were down 43 cents and soft red wheat was down 39 cents. But I think the calm before the storm is what I refer to about next Friday. Not only do we get USDA's updated supply demand numbers, we also get 1920 supply demand numbers. And we got word later today from a interview Vice President Pence did on CNBC that it is pretty likely that Secretary Mnuchin will give a recommendation at the end of next week to President Trump, whether he can recommend a deal or tell him that one could not be reached. And so I think next Friday at this time, we're going to be talking a lot more quickly and about a lot more things.
So the news about that is that Friday we'll have the WASDE report in the morning at 11 o'clock, as you said. So we'll get the first look at the 2019-2020 or new crop numbers from USDA. And on top of that, we'll know hopefully something about what happened with the trade deal with China. That's a scary day, I guess.
Well, yeah, and you know, it really begs the question after this week whether we've done enough damage in the soybeans or not. I think we have, both fundamentally and technically. You know, plus or minus 10 cents at this stage. And I think the fundamentals, it goes back to something we spoke about a couple weeks ago on Commodity Week, and that is the meal. The meal prices did not hold $300 a ton. They went ahead and led the market lower. But now we are at levels not seen since, I believe, September of 2017, when it comes to the meal, cash meal market at the Gulf of Mexico. And so meal is at almost a two-year low at this stage. Technically, I think you have a situation set up now that the beans and new crop have fallen to the December corn to only be about 2.2 times the price of December corn. That's a contract low, and we matched the contract low from last September. So here again, I think we've priced in an ample amount of bean acreage shifting because of the planting delays. I was actually on the phone right before we came on air, Todd, with a mutual colleague in South Dakota, and they're actually doing meetings next week on not only spring wheat prevent plant, but also soybean prevent plant and corn prevent plant, that they may have prevent plant in all three, starting with spring wheat. So I think if the wheat and the corn could find some support here and kind of join together, and that's something we've been waiting for quite some time, I think the beans would be very quickly able to find support technically and from a sentiment and momentum standpoint as well. Yeah.
When you get far enough north, and I don't know about South Dakota's, but the prevent plant dates aren't all that far away for corn.
No, they're not. In fact, May 25th, and in a lot of cases, the spring wheat prevent plant and the corn prevent plant are almost identical in like North Dakota and Minnesota, but you'll hit prevent plant in southeastern South Dakota on the 5th, and that's so next week. And I think this is where you may get some fireworks Monday night, Tuesday, depending on what the prevent plant talk is and also what the USDA gives us for planning progress. And I'd say the third leg of the stool going into Friday's report and the tariff news is, do we get a sell signal out of the dollar? We had one. The Federal Reserve came out this week, took it away from us literally on the chart that I watch. But now going into Friday's close, we're down another 0.33% in the dollar index, and that weekly sell signal is coming to fruition again. So it'd be great to see that going into today's close.
So there on the Missouri River, and you look out across the banks there, you had a tough time earlier in the year. Although I think things have dried out. Have farmers in your area moved to plant pretty quickly?
Yeah, most everybody got done this past week with corn if they weren't in the bottoms. A lot of the bottoms won't get planted because they just continue to pond with every 1 or 1.5 inches we get. So the way the Missouri River bottom looks from my office and house 3 miles across the bottoms is very similar to what it looked like when the levee broke because of the rain we've had. But you get anywhere where there's a little bit higher ground, and obviously the terraced ground, and all the producers I've talked with are planted. Didn't go in the greatest, not compared to the last couple of years, but they're happy it's in.
Yeah, and so the top part of Missouri, the bottom part of Iowa has also, I think, been moving fairly quickly. And while that's not the bulk of Illinois or the bulk of Iowa, it does get reflected in the USDA numbers when they come out Monday.
Yeah, 20% is going to be a big number because that kind of puts you in the corn planting along the lines of 2013, and it keeps you at the second slowest pace since 1993. And, you know, obviously everybody thinks 1993, they think the flood. A couple different times we flooded, once in the spring, but then really a lot more in the June, July time period. But yeah, if we'd stick around 20% and only gain about 5% on corn on Monday's numbers, I think that could present an opportunity for the corn to try and test the near-term resistance, which is right around 366 on a daily continuation chart. That's the 200-day moving average. That would be really nice to take out on a closing basis, and that's only a couple 3 cents away.
I know, because I just saw the chart that Scott Irwin and Todd Hubbs had put together of the six wet year or late year corn planting yields, and 2013 was below trend, but just barely, not very much. Of course, I think it probably dried out and producers were able to move. I don't recall what or have any knowledge of what that looked like after next week. So we'll see how things begin to turn out. What else is in the list of things you wanted to discuss for the day? Anything?
Yeah, I think the only other thing I'd kick off is, like a lot of people probably this weekend, I'll be putting out the acreage assessments, you know, versus what I had on the March 30th report. And I'll be dropping down the corn a little bit, but I was at 92 million back on March 30th. I think I'll probably be at 91.6. If that's correct, that puts you at a 15 billion bushel carryover. That takes 300 million bushels off the ending stocks, and that gets you back in the ballpark of trying to get $4 corn again in the new crop. So those are some of the numbers that maybe will be kicked around next week. They will matter a lot more if we get a trade deal, though.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks so much, and we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thanks for having me, sir.
That's Mike Zuzulo of GlobalAnalytics.biz. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, you know, the FarmDoc Daily team has done some data mining to try and figure out the implications of late planting on the corn crop and the end-of-season yield. Scott Irwin and Todd Hubbs looked into the matter, and Scott's here now to discuss just exactly what all of that research came up with. Hey, Scott, what did you and Todd Hubbs find?
Well, there are really only two states of late planting that matter. There's early or a little bit late. If you lump that all into one category, there's really very little aggregate impact on corn yields in the United States, which actually makes sense because we know that from the field trials that agronomists have done on planting dates that the response curve is really flat until you get to mid-May. And that's pretty much what the aggregate data says. If you get most of the crop planted in our data before May 20th, you know, other things take over and there's not much relationship. But what we really focused on this time was the handful of years that are in the other category of what you'd call really late planting. And that was the focus of our analysis this time.
So I want to come back to just 1 year, 2009, because mm-hmm. that's a fairly recent one and you cited it. I think in that particular year, it was Iowa that was just rain soaked and had a difficult time getting their crop in.
I believe that is correct. I'd have to check the data to make sure, but it was definitely quite a late year. I believe that in total, the U.S. corn, we had about 30% of the crop planted after May 20th, and most of that in the Western Corn Belt is my recollection. So that's what happened in 2009.
Yeah, so we've got these years. There are six of them. How many times and by off by how much was the yield?
Okay. There are, in these 6 years, our data starts in 1980 to 2018. There were 6 years when late planting was 10% or more above average. And our average is 17%. So that means the late planting is 27% or more of the total acreage. 6 years. Five of those years were below trend. So that's 5/6 or 83% of the time. And on average, the yields were 6.1 bushels below trend. So that's a pretty substantial yield hit on average if you get into that category of what I call really late planting.
So I'm going to summarize this in the way a reporter would do it, mm-hmm. see if I've got this right. So in years where there was late planting after the 20th of May and 30% of the crop wasn't in the ground, 80% of the time there was about a 6-bushel drop in yield.
The first part's correct. There's around an 80% chance of being below trend, but there's a variation. Some years are a lot worse than 6 bushels below trend, and some years were better than that. On average, in those 6 years, you were off by 6.1 bushels an acre.
So this year, we're in the waiting game at this point.
Absolutely. So the question is 2019 going to be one of those very late years? And our analysis indicates that we think that that's a very high probability at the present time that we're going to be in that very late category, because you already have soil saturated in much of the Corn Belt. And if it hasn't stopped planting, it's certainly really slowed down the start. We have some accumulated field work that's from last fall that slows things down further. The weather forecast for the next 10 days is not very encouraging, particularly here in kind of east of the Mississippi in particular. And then at some point, you just simply kind of run out of days that you need to get the crop planted in a more timely manner.
Did you look at any years that were greater than 30% not planted after the 20th of May?
We sure did. There are 2 years in particular that I think we should really be thinking about this year with the way things are shaping up. It's too early to make a firm projection in this manner, but I think we should be having our eye on 3 years in the 1990s when we had extremely late planting on the order of 35% to 50%. I mean, really, really late. Those years are 1993, 95, and 96. And in 1995, we almost hit 50%. After May 20th. So I think that there's probably even money chance that we will challenge that 1995 record, at least since 1980, in terms of the magnitude of late planting in the U.S. with the way things are shaping up.
And 1993 is an oddball because that was the year of the Great Flood, and those rains came after the planting and before.
Yeah, what people don't realize is that 1993 spring was wet. That should put a little bit of a shiver up your spine in the sense that it was extremely wet, delayed planting, and then the deluge came in the summer. I'm not, you know, I have no idea what the summer weather is going to be. It's always important to keep in mind that whatever the final outcome is in terms of the level of late planting, that summer weather can either completely offset it and you can have a good crop, or it can just make a bad situation worse. We've seen both of those in the data.
June, July, and I suppose in this case, early August are the months to watch.
That's right. But it sure looks to me, Todd, like we're heading to a point where I believe coming out of planting, what I like to think of as the launch point for projecting yields in 2019, I believe is a lot lower than what the vast majority of the market is projecting right now.
By that, you mean the national average yield at this point in time.
That's right. Coming out of planting, I will not be surprised if, you know, the data tells us you should start below 170. Now, we can quickly, with good summer weather, recover. But our launch point's going to be, I think, a lot lower than what the market is assuming right now.
It'll be very interesting to see what USDA says that launch point is on the 10th of May. They oftentimes, actually almost always, include the planting conditions up until that point.
And in fact, they always publish their model. It's sure going to be interesting to see. That is going to be one of the more interesting projections in a number of years in that May WASDE, because that's the first time that they take into account actual conditions in the fields. It's not a formal survey. They just have a simple statistical model like all the rest of us use, with trend and a late planting variable. And they're starting at 176, which is really close to the trend estimate I use, is just a smidgen lower, 175.4. That's what Todd Hubs and I use. But it's going to be really interesting. I know that that model is going to be in that range I'm talking about if the next couple weeks play out the way it looks. Are they going to really have the courage to follow that model down to, say, you know, 169, 170, 171, whatever? Because it's clearly going to project, because I know that model and I know the coefficients, and they'll project an even higher amount of late planting than I do, because their model uses May 15th and I use May 20th.
Will be fun.
I'll bet they're already having lots of interesting discussions behind closed doors at the World Ag Outlook Board about what in the heck are we going to do with the corn trend yield.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Always a pleasure.
Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Friday afternoon, Eric Snodgrass joins us from Agrible to take a look at the weather forecast. Eric, let's start with the rainfall totals over the past week or so. What have you learned from the numbers?
Yeah, well, the numbers are ridiculous. We've basically seen from eastern Texas through Oklahoma, through Missouri, and then into Illinois, with the repeated rounds of rain and thunderstorms. Some of the numbers in the western and central part of the state, getting all the way down to the southern part of the state, range anywhere between 3 and 6 inches. And we have similar amounts in the north central part of the U.S., or sorry, part of Illinois. Really funny to say this, but the drier place was actually east central Illinois, where we were still getting 2, 3, and 4 inch rainfall amounts locally. Now, what's interesting is when you take a look at how our planting progress has been in the state of Illinois, while we haven't got much work done in east central Illinois or even over towards Springfield, like Sangamon County, go a little north of there and west of there, and progress was made during that drier stretch around Easter. So those fields just got soaked. I imagine there's a lot of standing water. And then we're, of course, continuing to see delays here just because of the torrential rainfall amounts. And because of that, you know, we've seen some major problems on our river networks. And we're breaking records. And it's kind of hard to say, but we're breaking records we set in 1993 along the Mississippi and along the Illinois River, especially in Davenport up there on the Mississippi, where if you've been watching the news, you've probably seen the flooding that's happened there, breached a protective barrier, and they got flooding downtown. So it's been pretty rough in certain parts of the state of Illinois with all this recent rainfall.
Weather patterns for next week?
Well, I guess I could call it good news, but it's not really that great of news. If in the state of Illinois, we do have rain moving through the southern half of the state, maybe getting as far north as I-72. That'll be coming through tonight into tomorrow morning and then getting over to Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky throughout the day. After that, you know, the rest of Saturday and Sunday and even part of Monday are going to look pleasant and look dry. And normally we would say, hey, we'll get some stuff done. But there's just so much water, it doesn't even matter that it's drying down a little bit over the weekend because the pattern next week looks to be active again. So we're going to see again the same regions that you've been seeing getting wet because the whole overall pattern with a southeast ridge and a southwestern United States trough, that is one where we just get continual moisture out of the Gulf of Mexico. So I'm watching several systems again middle to end of next week that are just going to be bringing in the rainfall.
Do things change after the 10th of May? That would be Friday next week.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping when we talk again next Friday that the things I'm seeing right now are still true. And what that is that by the time we get to the 10th, 11th, 12th, the broader trough feature, which is to our west, which is linked up to this trough that's in central Canada, it looks as though it's going to move to the eastern U.S. Now, we want that. We want to be on the western side of a trough. Yes, it's a little cooler there, but it is drier there. And so we're seeing this time period right around the middle of the month where we could get some drier days in. Now, we have to get a lot of dry days in, right? We got to have several, 10, 15 of these in a row. And I'm not seeing that because by the time we get to the third and fourth week of the month, we're seeing once again a ridge building over the southeast and the jet stream just screaming out of the Pacific. And you put all that together and we just go back into this wetter pattern toward the end of the month. So I always say it like this, whatever is a storm chaser's dream is a farmer's nightmare. And we're going to be seeing some storm chaser dream type like scenarios as we progress through the end of this month.
How about next month?
Well, we've seen some of the longer term models. I'm talking about the European model and this model we run in the U.S. called the CFSB2. They keep hinting at keeping the Eastern Corn Belt on the drier side when we get into June. Now, to be honest, statistically, we would want that. If we do get this crop planted, we would want a little bit drier June just because it forces the plant to go looking for water, and we'd like to have that better root structure than if it was just wet once the crop got planted. Central U.S. and Western Corn Belt, I don't see that out of the models. They're picking up on a wetter pattern. Now, that's a long-term outlook from just two different modeling centers. So I'm going to say this. It's a little speculative at this point, and I don't see concrete evidence in it, but if persistence is a guide, then I expect to see the Central Plains continue to have problems throughout the next 6 weeks or so.
And finally, we should take a look at the global front. I take it the safrinha or second crop corn in Brazil is still in good shape?
Yeah, it is. We would normally be seeing the monsoons slow down a little bit at this time of year, but they're still carrying a little bit of a wet bias, which means that's about as good conditions as you could ask for coming out of Brazil. But elsewhere around the world, things are a little bit different. It's very cold in parts of Central Europe. Same pattern that's affecting us is actually affecting them. They get all of our old weather systems, believe it or not. And they've got a deep, deep trough in the middle part of Europe, which is actually sending temperatures in Germany below freezing and all the surrounding countries. So they're cold there. But I think the global highlight in terms of impactful weather is actually happening in India. There's a 500 million people right now that are being impacted by a tropical cyclone that reached category 4 strength going right up on the east side of India, going toward Bangladesh. Historically, that is one of the places on Earth that records the highest number of fatalities when it comes to flooding due to tropical cyclones. So there's a lot of concern about that part of the world right now.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.